Okay, Tal Gore, welcome to Radius of Reason. For everybody who's not familiar, Tal Gore is a lifestyle entrepreneur, an author, most recently of a published book, Smarter Goals, which came out in 2023, but also of The Art of Fully Living. Tal is also a coach helping people build a financially abundant lifestyle and also design a life of their dreams, as Tal has it listed on his website, which we'll include in the episode description as well. Tal, what I wanted to ask you, it seems that you have kind of planted your flag to a certain extent in the coaching industry. You're trying to help people achieve their goals, achieve their objectives, help them set goals in their lives. And when I was doing a little bit of research on your work, I stumbled upon a post you made on Instagram in 2018 where you were kind of thinking out loud about the nature of gurus. And you said and encouraged individuals to dump gurus and follow yourself, to really become your own guru. And I'm curious, with that statement, which is a fairly powerful statement, how do you align yourself to the guru industry? Why should people be following you instead of pursuing their own internal guru, so to speak?
Well, in general, you follow who you're inspired by. So certain people have, let's say, integrated something, but that doesn't necessarily mean that like their journey is your journey. So it's just like a stage and inspiration. There's a certain quality that a person wants to embody. And yeah, it's nice to follow. And so I always recommend, okay, follow me for a while. And then some point you feel that someone else embodies something else that you want to integrate, go there. Like, but I don't believe like there's a one way or one person that like you should follow your entire life, because otherwise you don't find your uniqueness. So we're all unique. We all have unique gifts, and we're here to find our uniqueness in some ways and then gift it to the world or be of service to the world with this place of uniqueness.
Hey guys, hope you're enjoying the show. We'll get back to talking to Tal in a second. But first, we want to talk about our sponsor, Costco. Andre, tell them why Costco is sponsoring our podcast.
Costco is sponsoring our podcast because we offer abundance. And as you know, Costco offers an abundance of goods.
Spiritual abundance.
Spiritual
also abundance. Brought to you by Tal Gore.
Tal Gore. So, the majestic...
Has a guest ever been a sponsor of a podcast?
It has now. It has now.
All right. Like, subscribe, comment down below. Back to the show.
So would you characterize your relationship with the role of a guru? I mean, would you have a positive view on some of the individuals on the internet? You know, in the past, we've spoken and dissected some of them along the lines of Andrew Tate, Jordan Peterson. Do you view these as positive contributions to human society as it stands now? Or are you still more critical of this kind of role that the likes of Andrew Tate play in our kind of collective culture?
Well, you can see that Andrew Tate is a stage in someone's development. So it could be, let's say, extreme masculinity or something with power that a person wants in their life. But to me, it's a stage. So every quote-unquote guru just means teacher, yeah? Like, so is a teacher. And maybe someone follow Andrew Tate for a year or two and then realize, oh, okay, I need to elevate from that. So I don't see like Andrew Tate as a negative contribution. In some ways, like he just helps certain people to move to wherever they need to move. And even certain people that I quote unquote like are negative contributions to society, that also helps in terms of polarization and the other side of it to come up. So if there's a lot of darkness, potentially a force of light will come. So I don't see things as negative as positive. I just see everything is evolving all the time.
All right, Tal. So if somebody's searching online and they've got options like Tim Ferriss, Deepak Chopra, you know, Tony Robbins, why would they buy your book? Why would they buy one of your workbooks that you sell on your website? Like, what is that? What is your selling point, I guess? What distinguishes you from the rest?
Honestly, like I'm just part of the evolution. Yeah, like everyone is in some ways contributing to evolving. So it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm the most unique person in any way or form. What it means is that there is some kind of resonance when someone, let's say, come to a certain website or a certain person or hear a certain voice. And that resonance is important. Yeah. So if someone has a resonance with me, pretty much my journey is very much about self-exploration. And in some ways, I would say extreme self-exploration, because I went to really certain extremes in my life. And I really wanted to find, like, you know, deep wisdom about who I am. Yeah. Like, how do I know who I am if I'm not going out there and try different things? Another thing about me is I really believe in integration and application. So there's a lot of words basically online. Everyone is talking words. I believe in application. So you're applying the words. You can take, like, I don't know, someone talk for an hour, take one thing, small thing, and start applying it in your life. That's how I see it. That's the value of doing a workbook or a serious kind of application. Maybe another word is embodiment. You embody the ideas that you hear from another person.
Yeah, Tal, I do want to touch on your philosophy, and we will get to that. But I kind of want to circle back to the self-help industry as a whole. Do you view any elements of the self-help / guru industry as toxic?
There's just too many words. Really, there's just a lot of words. not enough embodiment. You know, a lot of people just consuming. But at some point, you will have to get to a point. Okay, let's take action. Let's make mistakes. Let's go into failure. Let's just go toward fears. So that's what I feel like. I mean, honestly, I'm not so in the industry, so to speak. You know, like consuming as much. I'm really interested in action, literally.
Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting element, I think, to some of the arguments that you make or the suggestions that you have. But how often do you find it that somebody is actually able to, you know, take a piece of wisdom or advice? You know, again, you called out this embracing rejection, which I think you've written about in your first book as well. This idea of like walking towards your fear, and it's going to take the wind out of the sails of fear or whatnot. I mean, that's fantastic, and, you know, certainly very motivational. How often is it that individuals are actually able to translate inspiration they get from a piece of text or a video clip online of this nature and translate it to direct impactful action in their lives? Or is it just mental masturbation, so to speak? How often have you seen it in your experience that action is actually taken that you're suggesting?
Well, honestly, I have no idea about whoever consume, I don't know, my books or whatever I post, but I do one-year journeys, like a mentorship journey for 1 year, and I can see one-on-one my clients, quote-unquote, take action. It's 1 year. So as you can imagine, in 1 year, we can achieve quite a lot. And of course, it's not like I'm pushing. It's gradual. So it's very important for a person to understand their fears, understand that you need to set a certain foundation, and not just like push and have a lot of willpower in the beginning, but then realize, ooh, I don't have the right beliefs. I don't have the right identity. I'm afraid to set boundaries. I don't have the right vision. I'm not aligned with my actions. There's a lot of things, you know, to take into account. So I feel like there's a lot of advice out there, but it's not necessarily, not a lot of seriousness around the journey. I took my journey very, very serious. I took the whole idea of goal setting in a very serious way. And I evolved in some ways some of the advice out there, which is a little bit too logical and too straightforward and not necessarily taking into account aspects of emotions, aspects of, spirit and a lot of other dimensions, which again, because I kind of narrowed it, like in my life, I said, okay, I'm going to focus on this area of goals. I found certain things that I say, okay, this is something that a person can take and go on a meaningful journey. So I'm very specific. You see, like I narrowed my life and said, okay, this is what I'm focusing on. Like you're focusing on something else, and then we can help each other with whatever we find.
Hello, everybody. Hopefully you're enjoying this conversation with Tal Gore. If you want to support our work, please make sure to hit that like button, subscribe to our channel, and also, as always, leave a comment. We love hearing from you.
I also exist.
And,
is it answered?
I mean, just out of curiosity. Yeah, yeah. As a quick follow-up to that, I mean, and you don't have to name specifics, but like, if you had like your proudest observed like success in working with, I guess, your clients, what jumps to mind? Like, you talk about this like year-long journey consultation you've done, or you do, that you offer up. And we've discussed like, you know, injecting action as opposed to just reading shit you find online. What has been the proudest thing you've seen one of your clients accomplish? What journey have you taken somebody on?
Yeah, I have quite a few, but one of them is a guy that is quite successful as an entrepreneur, like multi-million dollar like businesses, but he hasn't feel fulfilled, you know? He hasn't feel fulfilled because potentially he hasn't explored himself enough and just pursued what society like kind of encourage you to pursue, whatever, more money or more power or whatever. And basically he became from a kind of multi-million dollar entrepreneur to become a meditation teacher that is teaching all around the world. So he take the aspects of what he learned from entrepreneurship, all right, and being a good businessman. Mm. And then basically now he's like, yeah, quite a big teacher, and giving his true service, like what he really, really wanted to give. So as you can imagine, it's very different, you know, to being a meditation teacher, to be like, I don't know, a CEO or something like that. And to me, that's a transformation. Or even like, you know, something simple as a woman who's been, you know, married for 20 years and she really feels that she wants to get a divorce, but she can't do it. And it takes a year. It can take a long time and a lot of fears around money and around loneliness. And so it's a difference, yeah, between each person. But maybe the one common thing is there's a very deep fear to change or to transform. And we work on it. Yeah. And it takes usually a year or more. Some clients have more than 5 years journey because you always evolve. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think this is a good segue then into maybe your philosophy. But I guess just before we get into that, do you think that people can find happiness in everyday things, in their routines? Do they need to do something completely wild, completely extravagant? Do they have to, you know, abandon their family and travel the world or something along those lines, something completely Instagram worthy?
Well, I'll say something about happiness. First of all, I think there's a lot of wrong advices there about happiness. Happiness to me is not something to pursue directly. It comes indirectly. And it comes indirectly, it's a bit of a paradox because, like, if you embrace more of your unhappiness, you can allow happiness to kick in. All right. So I don't know if it makes sense for you, but I can delve deeper into that. And in general, I would say that happiness is not necessarily the highest goal. It's not also not necessarily a big deal, actually. You can be quite happy if you remove a lot of your needs. Yeah. Like people have too many barriers to happiness. They put too many, like, oh, I need this to be happy. I need that to be happy. I need that to be happy. And then, of course, like, you don't have a lot of happiness. But if you reduce it, all right, you reduce your needs around happiness, then happiness can come in. So basically, what I want to say to summarize it is just to create an environment for happiness to come in indirectly, effortlessly.
Yeah, I guess maybe some of this is semantics. You know, you can call it happiness, life satisfaction, fulfillment, meaning, purpose. I guess what I'm alluding to is, you know, and your life is one example of this. The guy that you coached that became a, you know, a meditation guru is another example. But it seems like this is a consistent theme with, you know, the kind of like the Tim Ferriss-esque self-help people where, you know, you've got to gain financial independence. You know, you have to have this like freedom to travel the world, et cetera. And I'm not saying those things aren't nice, but I guess it doesn't really answer the question. If someone is working a 9-to-5 job and they've got a family, two kids, can they can they find a life, let's say, that is worth living in terms of meaning and purpose and enjoyment and all those things? Does the self-help industry not almost provide, by virtue of a comparison, you've heard of the quote, comparison is the thief of joy, right? By highlighting like what could be, you're almost paradoxically causing unhappiness, because now they're saying, well, my life's not that. My life's not this Instagram life. Therefore, now I need the course, or now I need to buy the book to understand how to get to this point, where if it's truly just limiting your desires, then you could do that in any context.
Yeah, but I can have a gap between what I want and still be happy. Like, you see, like, there is a, this is why I say belief exploration is very important. Why do I have to, let's say, look in the mirror, hate myself in order to lose weight? I don't have to. I just need to really change the way I pursue goals. Another thing that I want to say, happiness and fulfillment for me is different. As I said, happiness is not necessarily, I don't want to say this is the goal. This is not necessarily the goal to be happy. You can be happy just being grateful about the fact that you have a shelter or a family or healthiness or whatever it is, well-being. Fulfillment is something different. The word actually means to be full. And you can really be full if you do what you came here to do. So that's what I say, like, it's very important to go into self-exploration to understand what you're here to do. So if I, for example, here to be a father of a kid, I can be very fulfilled by that. I don't necessarily need to be, quote, unquote, Tim Ferriss and go and be, I don't know, multimillionaire or whatever. I don't. So a person is called to explore their potential. And if the gap between where you are and what your potential is very big, okay, you go on a journey. But again, you don't have to be unhappy on your journey. Okay, there's a gap. I'm grateful for this journey. And let's go into that.
So it kind of almost sounded like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost sounded like you sort of make the case for almost a sort of predestination in your belief system, where you talk about the paths and you talk about, you know, somebody's living up to whatever purpose they have, either fatherhood or to be some guy on a stage jumping up and down in front of a bunch of people in an audience. Do you take free will into account when you kind of think about your philosophy and structure your philosophy? How much control does the individual have on the outcome of their fate and like actually managing their unhappiness that they're not living up to their standard or something like that?
Honestly, I don't go there. I mean, I'm happy to go into philosophical question and, like, you know, free will, but it's just, again, a lot of words. It's just, I know that I have a calling, I have a drive, and I go for it. You see, it's very simple. Like, you have an inner calling, and you can sense there is a potential. Do I really need to go into this, like, spirituality and the nature of everything? And is it a dream? It's not a dream. You know what? Okay, it's a dream. So, okay, let me be an amazing character. Let me play the character really, really well and enjoy the journey. And of course, from time to time, I can take a step back from the dream, meditate, detach, feel that it's a dream or whatever. But I don't go into, like, debate of this versus this. I mean, there's a mystery. There's paradoxes in this reality. But the most, I mean, a person can literally operate in a very simple way and gain a lot of fulfillment and feel that they live their purpose. Whether it's, like, I don't know, predestined or not predestined, I don't go into that. It's just a lot of words, again. Too much philosophy, not enough action, not enough embodiment.
I do think, though, the philosophical frameworks can help us understand certain things. And I think, you know, when you look at, for example, personality in terms of, you know, psychology and what's been established, for example, the big five personality traits, openness, conscientiousness, agreeableness, neuroticism, et cetera. I think I'm forgetting one. But you mentioned drive just a moment ago. Do you think a lot of people that are Do you think the personality differences can actually account for much of the success that certain people have when it comes to the self-help? Like, it already takes a certain someone to go out and buy a self-help book or try to find a resource. That already shows a certain level of drive. And so I don't know where I'm going with that, actually. Andre, where was I going with that? I had a point, but it just escaped me.
Maybe I can.
Too many words, Levon. Too many words.
No. I guess do you notice like the personality differences and how that plays into the success of perhaps your clients, and maybe what else you can draw from that?
Yeah, 100%. As I mentioned in the beginning, everyone is unique, very very unique. The DNA is unique. All right, so you call to explore the uniqueness that you have. In other words, you got certain gifts, even your desires, whatever your calling is your desires. I may have a complete different desires. Yeah. So, you use the word personality. I like to use the word essence more, because personality, I can be whoever I want. You know, I can take, okay, this personality, this identity, I can invent a whole character. But essence is something that you almost kind of born with, like it's certain talents, certain drive, take someone like Michael Jordan, all right? He's a winner, all right? He has a very strong desire to win. And in some way, this is his gift to the world. You know, he expressed an extreme version of like, I'm here to win. And another person is very compassionate inherently. They just want to be very compassionate. All right, that's the gift to the world. So you're here to explore your essence. Like in my case, growth is very big, you know, elevation in general. So I'm interested in personal development. But if another person is interested, I don't know, in being more loving and compassionate and forget about self-help, yeah, go there. You see, so everyone has their own uniqueness. And that's the important part, because here is a sentence that like really, maybe the bottom line of this. Who you are is why you're here. So you're called to explore who you are. And that's your purpose. Your purpose is who you are.
I think you're making it a big question.
Yeah.
You're making it sound as if it's something that is so intuitively obvious. And I think a lot of people have difficulty finding who they are and what they're called to do. I mean, you speak as if it's a given that they have this essence and it's just like right there. And all they have to do is go in that direction. But I'm sure you've experienced this yourself, and I think many people have. It's not necessarily obvious to the person that is struggling with that issue.
I agree with you 100%. It's a lifetime exploration, and potentially lifetimes, again, if there's lifetimes. So it's an exploration. But each time you shed another layer, you shed another layer. And even if you got to something, you say, oh, this is who I am, potentially there's more. Yeah, and life will show you, or here's another journey. And so to me, this is the main point. The main point is to keep exploring who you are. And as I said, it's a lifetime. But it's not necessarily like so random in the sense it's like you reveal certain aspects. So imagine like a diamond that you shed layer and layer and layer, and slowly and slowly you express your light in a much stronger way. Because we remove this fear, this fear, this fear, and then and people can sense it. People, this guy is literally expressing their essence, or expressing who they are. They can feel that. You know, you meet a person, they come into a room, and like you can sense that this guy is very different than you, but something in them has less fear, and more of their unique expression is coming out.
How does that work? Within, and I'm sorry, I got to ask this, within the bounds of capitalism, where it sounds like, I understand your philosophy, right? Like, life's purpose is discovering who we are, what our true purpose is, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems that's almost a luxury reserved for a certain percentage of society that can afford to explore and to travel the bounds of their like psyche to understand exactly who they are within their place in this world. But I mean, here in the U.S., as you're probably very well aware, we're going through some tough economic times, and a lot of people are, working two minimum wage jobs, taking the bus back and forth between work, overworked, tired, underappreciated, how are they to find their purpose and place in life, so to speak?
Every moment is an opportunity to sense into like your expression and who you are. Like, I mean, imagine a person, okay, like their big, let's say issue is like, they just can't stop eating. All right. And they, every time they, I don't know, like they just open the fridge every time. Okay. That's your spiritual pride. Is it like exploring yourself is about that. Like, can you sense the fear that you have? Can you sense the limitation? Can you, you know, you have a practice. And as you practice, you reveal something about you. You reveal something about even who you're not, you know? You again, like, mm-hmm. it, I say it's a lifetime exploration, and it's not necessarily, you know, that like there's a score here. Even if you advance a little bit, you are literally supporting the whole one consciousness in some way. So if I integrated a certain fear, I am impacting the whole collective. That's my view anyway. So it's not necessarily I'm giving a score. Some people are high, some people are low. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess here's one thing that I'm noticing based on what you're saying is it seems like there are no limits to human potential, like in your philosophy. And I find that not supported by science in terms of what we've seen in psychology. I don't want to get into free will, but I think that could also be a trap that people are led into to thinking they are capable of anything, because I think some people are far more talented and capable than others. And I think for the people that are less talented and capable, that could be a trap. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, every person has certain limitations. I mean, I'm actually agreeing with you. There's limitations. I mean, it's quite easy.
Where in your philosophy are you handling those limitations? Like, I don't think I ever, I read your book, and I'm not sure I saw where limitations are being accounted for.
There are limitations. The body itself is already limiting you. Yeah, like I can't jump too high or whatever. So there are limitations, but within those limitations, potentially there is infinite explorations. So yeah, maybe again, like I'm a fairly good communicator, but let's say I didn't get the talent of communication, but I got another talent, you know, around compassion or whatever. So within that, I can go and explore more and more and more. So it's not that like every person just go all over the place and like say, okay, unlimited potential and whatever. No, you, Within the limitation you have, you can go to the infinite exploration. It's a bit of a paradox, yeah? But like those boundaries allow you to explore in, let's say, in a more conscious way, in a more narrow way. But there it's infinite because you go deeper and deeper and deeper into this literally like a creation that you got or this body that you got. And from there, I'm exploring. Like if you look at me, I'm not trying to be Michael Jordan. I'm not, but I'm trying to be me. And who's me is a lifetime exploration. And I can go on and on and explore. Yeah.
What if I said you're just not trying hard enough to be Michael Jordan? Like you can do it. You're just not trying hard enough.
I don't want to. Forget about that. I don't want to. Why would I try? I mean, I don't have the same calling he has. But I'm trying to be Tal. Tal is potentially the Michael, whatever Michael Jordan achieved in his life, all right? I'm going within my vertical, by my narrow kind of like what I got, yeah? Like it's like, imagine like a poker, yeah? You got those cards, you play those cards, and within those cards, you try to play the best as you can, yeah? And I like the idea of there's like, you know, ability to explore more and more. I can see it in my own life. Forget about science and whatever. Like I can see it in my own life that like I can go on and on and explore more. And each time I'm surprised, ooh, there's another fear. And here's another fear. And every time I see a fear, there's an exploration. Why am I afraid? Like even think about the deepest fear of death itself. Yeah. Like to die. You know, if you take someone like Socrates, he got to a point that he was not afraid of death, his own death. So to me, that's an interesting exploration. Can I get to a point that I'm not afraid of this body or this ego dying? That's something to explore, no? Or maybe another way to look at it, it's like, you're going to lose everything in your life. And in some ways, you're going to lose your body. You're going to lose friends. You're going to lose money. You're going to lose. Okay, that's an exploration. You can take it and say, why am I afraid so much to lose? You see what I'm going to? And there's potential there. Because if you integrate this fear of losing, you're a really powerful being. And you can be really of service to others. And you can really go out there and really give your gift. So that's kind of another message maybe to share.
Interesting. And it does seem that a lot of your belief structure and the style of your coaching is kind of focusing on the individual, right? Kind of mm-hmm. a hyper-individualistic interpretation of one's life path. And how does that relate to kind of the greater collective? Where does the individual stand within a greater society in your philosophy, right? If everybody is thinking about their own life path, their own journey, the role they play within kind of their own narratives, their own hero story, if you will, how does that relate to the collective? And taking that into account, you know, we discussed that off air, we discussed, you know, we're facing these sort of collective threats on a civilizational level, right? Let's take global warming, for instance, rising sea levels, a lot of Pacific islands, I think that like Micronesia is going underwater or something like that. These things are not going to be addressed from an individual level. This is a collective problem that all of humanity has to come together to address to a certain extent, if you believe in that. You know, like, we don't have to get into the roots of that. But within a hyper-individualistic philosophy, how does that relate to one's duty and responsibility to kind of a civilizational narrative?
Yeah, so first of all, I say, like, I'm part of the one, yeah? Like, literally, I'm connected to everything. So I don't say, like, individual for me, I'm not separate, basically, I'm saying. Now, the way I look at it, it's like we all impact each other. So if I elevate, like, okay, if I smile right now, and you see my smile, and you feel something about that smile, and you open up a little bit, here, we're connected. You see, there's an impact. So by working on myself, there's an impact on society. Now, if I had a very specific calling, like a very specific collective goal, and that's my calling, all right, so let's say global warming, okay, go. I go there. Every person has their own unique calling. And if I, like, have this unique calling of, like, you explore yourself, and by exploring yourself, you help society, okay, that's my unique contribution. See, I don't see that, like, if we all have to be, like, go into like collective goals. It could be like, you know, if I just smile more, I already make an impact, and it could be a very big impact. One individual can make a huge impact just by elevating themselves. Now, another thing that I would say is, like, we all have a very, again, unique calling, unique truth. I'm not here to necessarily blend with your truth. We're here to figure out, like, okay, that's your truth, that's my truth. And we're literally like contributing to each other and playing versus like, okay, what's the one truth? And everyone has to agree on that. Yes, there's the laws of nature. Okay, we agree on that. But from, like, the fact that you have a calling for global warming and helping, let's say, global warming, great. I'm very happy that you exist. And this is your calling. And my calling is about, let's say, personal development and self-elevation and conscious elevation. And I go for that with all my power. And that's amazing that we're unique.
Yeah.
And we have unique callings.
Yeah, Tao, I think... If I can offer a different interpretation of what Andre was saying, if we go back in time and we look at human beings and how they lived, right, in small tribes, it wasn't ever every man for himself, and you needed each person in your tribe to do their function for the collective good and for the collective survival. Now, due to the scale of societies, obviously, people have become far more individualistic, but that is what has led to these massive collective problems, which will come back and bite us in the ass sooner than later. And, you know, I don't mean to disparage you, but, you know, earlier you said a lot of gurus, you know, they use a lot of words. And so what I just heard in your response was a lot of words. But when I look at your book, and I look at some of the decisions that you made in your life, you know, you, as far as I know, you don't have, you know, a family where you're raising kids And that's like a big issue right now, is the demographic collapse is happening around the world, China and Korea. It's happening in a lot of developed nations as well. If people think that whatever calling they have is not direct, not indirectly, but directly tied to the collective, I think that kind of mindset can be a problem.
Well, you come with the belief that, like, again, I respect where you're coming from, that, like, you say, like, okay, we need more kids. But if my individual calling is not to have kids and you have individual calling for having kids, go for it. I'm very happy that you exist. But if, like, for example, my calling is to adopt kids, all right, okay, I'll go with that. I'll go with the, you know, I'm not here necessarily to solve all the world problems. I don't have the abilities, you know, I don't have the possibility, but I may contribute in my small area and small circle. Now, another thing about what you said about
the tribe. But I guess that's the thing. Yeah, sorry.
One second. About the tribe.
Go ahead.
The way I look at it is you supported what I said, because even in a tribe, like, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, if I was a good hunter and you're a good healer, you do the healing and I do the hunting. Quote unquote, it's individual, but we're contributing to the collective. I don't think like everyone did the same thing. So that's how I see it. We're just like much bigger tribe now.
Maybe let me paraphrase and see if this is in line with what you're saying. So if we take a civilizational threat, the only way we as humanity would be able to address the civilizational threat is for everybody to do their part. Everybody, you know, you refer to it as a calling. The only way that we'll be able to address these things if everybody adheres to what their calling is and plays off of their strengths, and that is how we move forward. Would that be an accurate characterization of your philosophy?
To a point, if we all elevate, that's the word that I like to use, elevate. And what I mean by the word elevate, or the action, elevate, it means that, like, you know, we have a lot of fears. We operate from a very big ego, right? And if every person start to explore how the ego is like creating a lot of, let's say, issues in this world, as a society, we'll be in a much better place, right? And when I can take area after area after area, it could be wars even, you know, like a certain ego with just a very strong desire for power or whatever, creating a lot of distortion in this world. Or global warming, that because we're just like consuming because the ego is so hungry and never feel fulfilled, right? So again, there's a lot of big problems in this world. And it's hard for a person, okay, as you said, like, you know, everyday person to basically say, okay, they can even feel like, you know, it's just like, I don't know, analysis paralysis because it's so much. But if they start to take care of themselves and say, okay, what are my fears? Where am I, like, where my ego is, like, literally creating distortion for everyone else? And where can I give the little gift in this world? As a society, we will evolve.
So, okay, I take your point, Tal, but I still think maybe one more iteration of what Andre was trying to get at, because I think maybe the word here that's most useful is sacrifice. You are trying to frame it in a way that incentivizes purely the person's essence and their calling, and that will get us to where we need to be. But I guess the point that we're trying to make is, at some point you have to make a sacrifice. And to go back to that hunter-gatherer analogy, you know, you said someone's a healer, someone's a hunter. Well, that is an overly simplistic model, and that collapses when you realize that they have other duties, right? And functions in the tribe where they are making sacrifices for the collective good. I mean, that's why altruistic behavior evolved, because from an evolutionary standpoint, it was more beneficial to have people with altruistic tendencies than people who did not have it. And so I want to ask you just one more time, just so we're clear, and then we can move on to another topic. But where does sacrifice, what role does that play in your philosophy?
I like the word conscious sacrifice. So not every sacrifice necessarily is healthy, right? you can be very altruistic from ego, you know, from, you know, and so the question that I look at it is this: certain individuals explore themselves in such a way that they feel very abundant, they have less fears, and so they can contribute in this world in a much bigger way. And from that place, like, you know, they can come and say, okay, I'm fairly abundant. Imagine, let's say I have $1 billion in my bank account. All right. Why not sharing it? Am I afraid to lose money? And again, this fear that I'm talking about is the big problem. That's the big problem. And the illusion of, quote unquote, that we are our ego. So I'm really talking about elevation, conscious elevation, to a point that each person feel more and more abundant to give their gift. I'm actually sacrificing quite a lot, mm-hmm. you know, in my life. But it's coming because I come from a place of more and more abundance. If I have so much abundance, why would, like, at some point you say, like, you know, why would I want to take more from this world? Why not giving to the world? Because I'm abundant. And in general, I feel like, you know, when a person feels abundant, they naturally want to give because they're abundant. It's, imagine like a cup mm-hmm. is full of the water. It's like, okay, I have so much. Let me give. And you can see that quite a lot of individuals, they have the same calling to start giving. But I agree with you 100% that we're here at the end of the day to be of service to the collective. It's not about just me in the sense of the individual me. It's about exploring myself, quote unquote, in order to give and be of a bigger service to the collective.
And yeah, and I want to be fair to you, Tal. I mean, in your book, you have a chapter called, you know, Year of Giving. I believe is what it was called. And, you know, you're in Central America and you do a lot of charity work. I think even in the Northeast of the U.S., which you eventually moved to for a period of time. So I don't want people to get the impression that, you know, you're some sort of selfish person. You clearly, you know, have examples and have done a lot of giving in your life, more than probably a lot of other people. So I just want to be clear, you know, this is more of a philosophical kind of dissection of your philosophy and not, you know, a character assassination or anything like that. But Andre, it seemed like you had something on your mind.
No. I was just
okay.
Yeah, I was laughing at the Northeast United States. So I think we do need charity work in the U.S. as well, and I think that's not often discussed.
Yeah, hopefully that's your next calling, Tao.
I'll tell you something about that. I want to say something about that, actually. You know, I've been given actually quite a lot of money in general, but my biggest gift is literally the essence that I'm, the person development, the service that I feel like it's a sacred service. You see, I don't treat my quote unquote coaching as like, oh, I need to make money or I need to be more powerful or I need to be this some kind of guru and all of this blah, blah. Yeah. It's more of like, I have a gift. All right. I am very interested in elevation. I like it. I enjoy it. It's my passion. It's something that I got and I'm giving it. And even optimism, being optimistic, that's a giving. So my biggest contribution is around that. It's around my work. It's not necessarily about the amount of money. I mean, I built a house for someone. I built a school in Dominican Republic. I've done certain things, but that's not necessarily my biggest gift. You see where I'm going with that?
Mm.
So that's kind of right. How I feel, like being of service. Yeah.
But if I remember correctly, at some point, like in your life, I don't remember exactly what the time frame was, but you've talked in the past that, like, yeah, you did have a 9-to-5 desk job. I think it was like another interview I was watching with you, and you're describing there is either a health scare or some sort of accident, and you had to get back to your family, but you were working, and you had to like ask for permission to kind of go and visit your family during a stressful medical period. But so at some point you kind of left the trappings of what us non-grindcore guys here in the US would call just like, you know, a regular job. How did that transition happen? Like how did you leave the mundane world and get into a place where you're able to, as you say, kind of offer up a lifestyle that's more in line with your calling? What was like the process of that transition? And is it possible to make that transition in this day and age, right? I'm assuming you entered into this, we'll call it quote unquote coaching. There's various ways that you've described it, but this phase of your life, you didn't enter into the past 5 years. It's been over a decade almost, I imagine. How did that change happen? Is that change still possible with today's socioeconomic circumstances globally?
I feel, of course, it's possible for certain people who, again, I use the word calling. If they have, I mean, I'll bring like another aspect of pain. If a person have a very, very big pain in terms of like not having enough freedom in their life, they will go and explore that. And again, they may like stumble on limitations and obstacles and issues and whatever. I mean, you see, like even English, like 20 years ago, I didn't speak good English at all. So I had to really learn. And again, you may say that I have a certain talent. I don't believe I have a talent for language or anything, but I feel that my pain was driving me. The fact that I was like so limited with my options and choices, I was like, okay, I'm going to explore it. I didn't think about consciousness. I didn't think about the collective. I didn't think about all these things. You know, I came from a place of like, all right, I have pain and I want to explore and grow. And now where I am, okay, I evolved a little bit more. To kind of think a bit more of like, you know, novelty and service and everything we talked about. But I see it also part of the evolution. We're going on stages. Maybe first is like more of like, I'm focusing on my little reality that I have this problem and I solve it. And then this problem I solve. And at some point you become more and more powerful, let's call it. And with this abundance that you have, you can offer more to the world. And I like the idea of sacrifice and I like the idea of duty. Because, yeah, if you are a powerful being and you have a lot, it's part of your duty to share and give. So it depends on the person where they are, the stages in this journey of elevation. Maybe the person in the beginning is just all they care is about survival. I just need to survive. And then after that, okay, I just want to be successful, whatever it means to this person. And then maybe after that, it's about fulfillment and inner exploration and just being happy, whatever. And then maybe the highest is like, I just really want to be of service because I have all these gifts. I know quote, more and more about who I am and I go for it. So it's an evolution and stages. And at some point, I don't believe in skipping steps too much. If a person is really interested in just getting personal freedom, I fully support them for that. If they just, you know, just to feel like a little bit more powerful in their life, that they have a little bit more options, go for it. And then from that place, something else will evolve. Another calling will evolve. That's my view, my point of view.
Have you ever talked to a client and just told them to go to therapy? Like just like, hey, like, you know, don't pay for your monthly subscription. Just go talk to a therapist. Is there like any point when you transfer the expertise to somebody who's clearly able to address like maybe the more like symptomatic elements of their problems?
Yeah, first of all, I don't work with everyone. So the way I work is like once a year, I have one offering where I take just a limited amount of people and I select very, very specifically. Some people need quote unquote need therapy. And therapy to me is like, it's different than mentorship and coaching. It's specifically about, more going to the past and certain traumas and certain child issues. I'm very interested in like going into the potential, into the future and whatever. And of course, I can go with a person into therapy, but I'm not an expert, you know, at all around therapy. So I work with individuals that have a certain foundation, and then we build the foundation. So yes, I actually advise quite a lot of people to actually go to therapy. Mm-hmm. And I have good friends that are therapists, amazing therapists. And yeah, we're all giving our little service, yeah? Some people, by the way, I want to say, they just really need a good listening people who can listen to them. You know, talking about the tribe, like of millions of years ago, whatever, like a tribe where, like, if someone had a problem, the whole tribe was supporting them, were listening to them. But we're more in a more individualistic reality where some people feel so lonely, I don't even have anyone to listen to me, to my problems.
Yeah, there's actually, funny enough, there's a study that shows people that talk to a friend and people that went to a therapist, there was no difference in outcomes.
I agree. Yeah.
So there is some literature on that. But Tal, I know we're approaching on time. There's one question I wanted to ask you before we have to let you go. One of the principles that I really liked in your book was the idea of commitment. And this has been something that, you know, Andre and I have been dealing with as we've been doing the podcast. We always throw around the stat of, 99% of podcasts don't make it past episode 20. And so we're in the 1%, so that's good. We're committed.
Episode 32, baby.
But I guess I wanted to ask you, in your life, what was What was a moment, you know, during this decade of achieving all these goals where you felt like your commitment was most questioned? And how did you overcome that? How did you maintain the commitment?
Big question. I don't want to sound too spiritual, but 5 years ago, I had a snake bite, a near-death experience, literally. I literally died. And from that, I won't go too much into the details, but like from that event in my life, from that crisis, I had a very, very specific calling that I wanted to avoid because there was too much fear around it. And at some point in my life, I want to say that, like, I said, okay, everything I learned in my life, I'm going to put on this calling that I just got. And it's a lot about service, literally. And it's a lot about elevation. It's a lot about like being a contributor in this reality, because there's a part of me, honestly, like, okay, let me just go to New Zealand and just live a very quiet, good life. Why do I need, like, you know, like all these, I don't know, more problems, you know, when you go into the world, potentially you're going to have more and more and more issues coming in. But more and more, I feel that, like, talking about commitment is not just like a little decision. Okay, I decided to be committed. Commitment is literally designing your whole life, designing your environment, designing even the character that I play. Okay. Changing habit, changing belief, moving to another town, changing even friendships. Right. That's talking about commitment. Commitment is a complete, again, it sounds maybe a bit of extreme, but I know if a person committed by the actions that they took, not because if they told me that I'm committed. Like if you take certain actions, I can say, okay, this person is quite committed to his calling. Yeah. So what I want to say, it may be a bit gradual to be committed, but your action tells us if you're committed or not. And so I said quite a few things, but even if you take one of them, like changing environment or removing a certain friend that is toxic, or changing, a certain habit or belief or whatever, that's start to show a level of commitment. So, yeah, that's kind of how I see. And I'm still exploring how committed I am. You know, is it 10 out of 10? Is it 9 out of 10? I feel I'm closer. Yeah, I'm closer to this 10 of 10, which I like.
When you say removing a friend that's toxic, do you mean like doing a Muay Thai kick to their neck? Or...
No, I say loving no. You know, it's a no with love. In other words, it's like, you know, you can look at it. It's almost like, think about, like, you know, I give you attention right now. Yeah, I give you 1 hour of my attention. But usually for a friend, you give potentially a lot of attention. A person needs help, whatever. So the question is, like, who do you give attention? Like, you start to being like more conscious of how you, like, yeah, where does the attention goes? And so friendship is usually a place where you give a lot of attention. So you start to kind of play with that. Yeah.
I think the takeaway here is that we need to drop everything and move our podcast to like some interesting international locality. Maybe we'll be doing the show from like, I don't know, Tehran or something.
Tehran?
Yeah, at some point.
Yeah, in a prison cell.
Yeah. Who knows?
What are your goals? I'm just curious about the two of you. Like, what is your calling? Like your deep burning calling in terms of elevation and growth?
Andre, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. The easy question for me. I think, you know, if we break it down into the various stages of journeys that we've talked about, I think my calling right now is rationalizing my... well, let me take a step back. Tal, you're in the presence of people who also had to learn English as a second language. Third in some cases, actually. Yeah, so sympathy is there. But I think, you know, if we break it down to journeys, I am right now trying to better rationalize my identity of origin of where I was born with where I grew up here in the U.S. and trying to find a way that I'm not sacrificing too much, or I'm not killing off any side of my identity that shouldn't be killed off. And I think that's manifested. God, I'm using your language now. Manifested energies. Yeah.
You're slowly becoming a guru.
Yeah, right here. I'm about to start levitating here. Long story short, I think my stage right now in my journey is trying to live in accordance with my background and my foundation of moral principles. And that in itself has guided a transition into this stage in my life.
And that's very typical, Tal, of Andre, very existential. So
right.
So nothing out of the ordinary. For me personally, it's kind of like I break it down into two kind of categories. One is like personal, individual kind of aspirations. And that's, I think, more along the lines of like having a good family and kind of living that more, I would say, natural human life. But then I think in terms of like my goals that kind of subscribe to the collective, I would say, are to help actually promote this podcast, get it bigger, get bigger guests on, and also come up with some solution. Hopefully actually improve the conversation around a lot of the issues in the world. And yeah, maybe do some good that way. And then maybe do more actionable things. Maybe fundraisers, maybe whatever, to help actually, again, incentivize the best minds on the planet to produce solutions to problems instead of complaining about them on podcasts.
Yeah, one of the key things that we want to get into and evolve our platform into is less of a space where kind of just grievances are aired and where kind of there's complaining about problems and issues, and it's more so maybe kind of how you're talking about, directed towards action and solutions. Mm-hmm. Right, where if we have a concept as difficult to grapple with as kind of the proliferation of nuclear weapons, right, and it's just off the top of my head, we could sit here and we could talk about, oh my god, it's bad, it's, you know, it's going to contribute to instability, we might get into thermonuclear war, it's going to wipe out our, all those things are true, but what can we actually do from a standpoint of the individual contributing up to the collective? What can we do to start improving that, right? Like, can we start organizing, I don't know, letter writing campaigns to our state congressmen to lobby for additional restrictions to be put onto, you know, the exporting of uranium, things like that. We're trying to get to a point where we can less make it just like a platform to complain, more so make it a platform by which to drive constructive action.
I like
well
it very
said,
much.
Andre.
And,
well said.
Yeah, and
we spend an hour with Tal Gur, man. We spend an hour with him. We're all about action now, baby.
What
we're,
an inspiration. Everybody go buy his book.
Well,
his
speaking
workshops.
Of Tal, this is your time. You know, we've referenced two of your books at the start of the show, Smarter Goals, most recent one published in 2023. Art of Fully Living, Nirvana's Holding That Up. That's a 2017 book. What are you working on? Plug what you need to plug. This is your opportunity to do so.
I just feel that, you know, whoever was inspired by this call, like, just really, like, connect with their vision, connect with their essence and their talent, and just really take time and space. There's just too much destruction, too much social media, blah, blah, in this world. Just take space and time, reflect, journal, But take it seriously. I just really feel like to have a message in the sense of like people just take their journey more and more seriously and become more powerful in order to give their gift in the world. I think this is like what I want for the two of you as well. It's the two of you have more power, literally more money. I wish you like whatever, like, you know, all those like, you know, see, like, I don't know how to say it. It's more of like this. Like, I want to contribute and I have the ability to contribute. Basically, that's the two things. You know, the power means like I have the ability to contribute and I want to do it. And that's it. That's like maybe a small message that I have for your audience. And yeah, let's maybe meet in 5 years. Hopefully you can interview Tim Ferriss, all these people that were the big people there. And get
yeah,
to more
we'll
conclusions.
We'll get you on a... Yeah, we'll get you on a stage with Tim Ferriss. You guys can argue about who has the best courses or books,
or we can put on the boxing gloves and just really, really, really settle the score.
Well,
in the
yeah, I was
going
to say, Tal, your next book should be like kicks for love or something. I don't know. or actually,
I like
don't
Tim Ferriss. He's a good person also. Yeah.
But yeah. Have you met him? Yeah.
No, but talking about action, he took a lot of action, you know, before he wrote his book, The 4 Hours Work Week. He was very much committed to self-exploration. And yeah, everyone buy his books as well and go in on their own self-exploration journey.
Sounds good. Well, Tal, thanks again, man.
Thank you for your time.
Really appreciate your time.
All right. Much love.